أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد. وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين، واللعن الدائم على أعدائهم أجمعين. As I said last night, we're going to make a shift from analytical history to some of the questions that are posed regarding Fatimiyya and the veracity of Fatimiyya and what we believe in as Shia regarding Fatimiyya. There's two different ways of proving something wrong. Number one is, or something that to show that something's not accurate. One way is to bring proof that shows that something didn't happen. That's one way of doing it. Another way of doing it is to show that if something had happened, there will be discrepancies as a result of it. It'll lead to a paradox and an irony somewhere. So for example, if I want to disprove God's existence, for example, as an atheist, I will say that God does not exist. They'll say, why? You'll say, because if there was to be a God, we had to see Him. And since we don't see Him, there is no God. Okay, this is a reason someone will present to show that there's no God. Sometimes they'll say, no, I'm not going to disprove His existence, but I'm going to put my finger on a few points, and those points that you agree with that are true, if you believe in those, then it's going to be impossible for you to believe in a God. Like what? For example, the whole story of suffering and evil in the world, which theodicy addresses. And theodicy tries to solve something called theodicy. Yes, you can look it up tonight. Theodicy tries to figure out the problem and solve the problem and issue of suffering and evil in the world. So someone will say, I'm not going to disprove God, but I'm going to point some things out in this world of creation that show that there can't be a God. And that, or at least a God that the way you believe in. So there's evil and suffering in the world. If there was a God, then He had to do something about it. Or if this God that you talk about that is all powerful, if He was all powerful and all knowing, He should do something about it, right? But He's not doing something about it, so He must not exist. This is not called disproving God, bringing an argument that disproves Him. No, this is called showing some of the discrepancies, pointing out some of the discrepancies and paradoxes in there being a God. Okay, having said that, when it comes to Fatimiyya and Fatimah al-Zahra's Shahada, there are different things that are sometimes pointed out as proof that it never happened, or as proof that the ties between Imam Ali and the other Khulafa was good indeed, they will tell you, because of these reasons. There's many. If you want to list them, there's so many of them. The same thing we've been doing these past nights, to just show the discrepancies. The other school of thought will also point out our discrepancies, and that's okay. That's what academic dialogue is all about. There's nothing wrong about that. And we respect them for that. It's all right. How dare he question? Well, he's questioning because he honestly doesn't know. I better have an answer. Or at least I better have figured out the issue so well for myself that I won't be shaken by these questions. I'll say there must be a reason I don't know. For example, let's go back to the God example. If someone has really, through solid proof, reach the point where they know God exists. For example, they say, if God doesn't exist, then where did all of creation come from? Where did all of existence come from? Where? Something who has existence for himself must have given existence to other things. Or else something can't just come into existence just like that. So for example, someone has an argument like this, the argument of contingency. ممكن الوجود and واجب الوجود, for example. They've solved the problem of God. Now they see suffering and evil in the world. What do? If they get stuck, they'll try their best to solve the problem. Let's say he's not able to solve the problem of suffering and evil. Does that mean that he's going to retreat on his belief of there being a God? No, because he's figured that out for sure. So Fatimiyya, same thing. If someone has figured out Fatimiyya, then these questions shouldn't pose that much of a problem. But nonetheless, we're going to address them anyway. Because sometimes you notice that, yes, there are people out there, or the younger ones, it's not their fault either. These questions come up and they're like, we have to find an answer to it, or else the whole story of Fatimiyya for us is going to be something that, you know, we're not sure about. Now these different questions, I've chosen three of them. They are on different degrees. I spoke about this somewhere else. I didn't want to repeat my speech, but I felt that I keep getting these questions, and that lecture is not online. So I thought it would be a good idea to address these issues, because everyone's asking these days. Lots of people are asking. Our own Shia brothers and sisters are asking. These questions, the ones that we've chosen to talk about, they are in different grades. What do I mean? Some of them, they shouldn't pose that much of a problem to Fatimiyya and the Shahada of Fatimah Zahra. Right? Some are, let's call it the danger level. Their danger level is one. It's not two or three. It's not way up there. It's at the first level. Danger level, one. Then some of them is no. Danger level is two. And then you have the last danger level, three. Yeah? These three that we're going to talk about, they have different degrees of danger to Fatimiyya. What are they? Number one, the whole story of why did Imam Ali name his children after the Khulafa? If there was bad ties between them, if there was a bad relationship between them. Now, and you hear this, they will tell you when you say Imam Ali or the Ahlul Bayt had a problem with the Khulafa, or not Khulafa, they had a problem, for example, with Umar ibn al-Khattab. Some of our Sunni brothers and sisters, they will say, which Umar are you talking about? Umar the son of Ali, Umar the son of Khattab, Umar the son of, I don't know, which Imam who had also happened to name his son Umar, which one are you talking about? In other words, they're letting us know that the Ahlul Bayt would name their children after the Khulafa, so there must be a good relationship. Yeah? That's one. But the danger level of this, and we're not going to address this too much because it's not that important in my opinion. There can be many reasons for this. Danger level one, not too problematic. Number two, and I saw this one today too online somewhere, randomly, is the marriage of Kulthum, that's the daughter of Fatimah Zahra and Imam Ali alayhi salam, with the second Khalifa. Now here, it gets a little difficult. It gets a little more problematic. Danger level isn't at the bottom. It goes up a little bit. Right? If you are forced to, not forced to, but if you name your children after somebody, that's one thing. Or you happen to name your children with a name that others that you don't agree with share that name, that's one thing. But for you to give your daughter's hand to someone else in marriage, that's big stuff. If you have issues, major issues, you don't do that. That's number two. And then danger level number three goes to the question that says, Imam Ali alayhi salam, how could he stand there and watch as the sanctity of the home of Fatima was compromised? And they came in. How could Imam Ali allow his hands to be tied, for example, and so on and so forth? Did not the Prophet tell Imam Ali alayhi salam that this Fatimah Zahra is an amana, is a trust I am leaving with you, take care of her? So how do we reconcile? This one is very important. Although, a little analysis here, and a little going to the ulama and what they've said should solve the problem. Nonetheless, if we don't address it, it might cause issues for some. If some of them are not solved, then Fatimiyya is compromised. So inshallah, we're going to try to address these one by one. Sallu ala Muhammadin wa ala Muhammad. Yes. The first question, why did Imam Ali name his children after? Well, this has been addressed by others as well, even in the English-speaking world. That's why I'm not going to put too much time on this. The answers are out there, but I'll just add a few things that I've noticed. Well, I haven't seen others say, maybe they have, I just didn't come across it. Something that'll help even more. Number one, let's talk about the name of Umar. They say Imam Ali, one of his sons, is named Umar. Okay. When we go, first of all, we have to be careful of the wording of the questions. If someone asks, why did Imam Ali name his son after the second Khalifa? We will say that who says he named it after the second Khalifa? It happens to be the same name as the second Khalifa, but it's not that the Imam is naming him after him. This has not been established. I think we're going to need a salawat and move forward, inshallah. Sallu ala Muhammad. And don't keep silent, recite another salawat. I'm saying this, but I don't act on this myself. If we knew how much a salawat is worth, like when you're on the bus, when you're on the train, in the tube, I don't know, wherever you are, like you're just sitting there thinking, then on the day of judgment, you'd be like, man, all of this was cash. And I had the chance. Salawats are cash, brothers and sisters. You want cash, recite a salawat. Yes. Allah has given us the opportunity so that every second of our life can be worth the while and we can benefit from it in the hereafter, even if we're sitting there doing nothing. Okay, anyway, so one thing, brothers and sisters, we have to understand when it comes to history. What are we talking about again? Why did he put that name on one of his sons, for example? Is to put ourselves in the context of back then. It's not one of the ways of answering many questions that come about regarding Islam and whatever, anything that has to do with history a long time ago, is to try to put yourself in that time and not look at now. For example, slavery. For example, the marriage of younger girls. Girls that if they were to get married at that age now, oh my God, it doesn't work like that. Yeah, it doesn't work now. Fine. Whatever. But back then, was it the same or not? To make a fair judgment, you have to understand the times. We have to understand that we're sitting here 1400 years later. After studying this history again and again and again, we have developed something towards certain names. Back then, these were common names. These were common names. People were giving them all the time. Let me give an example of the name of Umar, for example. They say 23 of the companions. Ibn Hajar al-Asqalani, he says this. He's not from the Shia school, from the Sunni school. In his Rijali book, he says this. 23 of the companions of the Prophet were named by the name of Umar, for example. So doesn't it make sense that maybe the Imam wasn't, if he was to name it after this child of his, after someone, it would be someone else by this name? But no, this name still, we have something against, we have a problem with this name. Well, we have it now, 1400 years later, brothers and sisters. We have to put ourselves in that time. Especially given the fact that we have a person by the name of Umar bin Abi Salma al-Makhzumi that was a great companion of the Prophet. Maybe Imam Ali is naming it after him. Uthman bin Maz'un, a great companion of the Prophet, the first to be buried in the Baqi'. Maybe he named him, one of his sons, Uthman, after him. We don't know. The point being, if you remember last night, the last prayer of the Prophet, we said, okay, fine, if someone stands in the place of the Prophet in his last prayer and prays instead of him, what link does that have with Khilafah? Here, same thing. It's nothing established. It might be a sign. That's about it. Nothing special going on. Especially given the next point that we see. That they say, now in history we have this. I'm going to try to read for you some of these examples. That with the Imam Ali's son, whose name was Umar, we have a hadith, we have reports. By our school? No, not our school. For example, the hadith says this. Who is this? No, it's not a hadith, of course. It's a report by Baladuri. In Ansab al-Ashraf, Which century did he live in? In the 3rd century after Hijrah. The farther back you go, the more value these books find. A book written in the 3rd century is better than a book written in the 6th or 7th century, for example, by Ibn Taymiyyah. Yes? He's saying this. Very simple. Umar ibn al-Khattab named the son of Ali. He named him Umar. He named him Umar. Okay. So someone else named the son of Ali ibn Abi Talib. Now once again, someone say, how dare he? How can he allow that? Imam Ali is strong. Imam Ali doesn't allow these things to happen. Once again, we have to go back and put ourselves in that time. Was it the case that you could go against everything the second Khalifa is doing or saying? No. Especially if that's not the only case that he's done this. We have other cases too. I don't want to spend too much time on this. I don't think this is very important, but let me just read this real quick. For example, it says the previous name of Abdullah bin Qais was Khayyat. The second Khalifa changed his name to Abdullah. That's one case. Abdul Rahman bin Harith was raised by the second Khalifa. His previous name was Ibrahim, but the second Khalifa changed it to this. The father of Masruq was Ajda. The second Khalifa changed it to Abdul Rahman. What else? Hormuzan, a person by the name of Hormuzan, he became Muslim. He was given a name of, I can't read this name. It's Urfuta or Arfta or something like that. Yeah, I should have looked this up. I thought I did. He was given to him by the second Khalifa. See, it's not that important for me. That's why. Tuhail bin Ribah was the brother of Bilal bin Ribah. Khalid bin, name was changed to Khalid, and so on and so forth. I don't want to go through the list. Anyway. So there's this apparently tradition or culture of giving names to other people or changing their names, especially with the second Khalifa. All right, maybe this was one of them. Maybe is enough, brothers and sisters. You don't have to prove that it wasn't the case. That person who has a claim has to prove that this was the case. The person who has a claim has to say that Ali ibn Abi Talib, yes, he named it after this individual and he told us that this is why I'm naming him. Or else, just a shadow of doubt is enough to put this aside, this argument aside. It won't be an argument anymore. They say in Arabic, إِذَا جَاءَ الْإِحْتِمَالِ بَطَلَ الْإِسْتِدْلَالِ. When ihtimal and possibility comes into the equation, the istidlal and the argument goes. It's not a valid argument anymore. Maybe the Prophet meant, when he said, مَنْ تُكُنْتُ مَوْلَهُ فَهَذَا عَلِيٌّ مَوْلَهُ, maybe he meant that he's his Khalifa. Will anyone accept this from us? No. Will anyone accept this from us? No. Because we're saying it's possible this is what he meant. Sorry, that's not going to cut it. Although we're saying it does mean it, it still doesn't cut it. Let alone if we say there's a possibility. So here, maybe it was another thing. You see, we're just using the same rhetoric, the same way of argumentation. And it's fine. This is how people will bring reasoning for each other. But let's not even talk about this. Let's move on to danger level number 2. I don't think this is very important. Although they make it seem like it's very important. Let's move on to the second question, which is more important. Brothers and sisters, you have a daughter. You have a daughter, and then you have issues with somebody. And then you have some major issues with somebody. And then that somebody comes and asks for your daughter's hand in marriage. You're gonna say, oh, okay, thank you for coming. Bismillah. No? Yes? If you have major beef with somebody, you're not going to give them your daughter's hand in marriage. So then what about the marriage of Kulthum and the second Khalifa? Those of you who hadn't heard about this, now you're hearing about this. But we have no choice to talk about these things because you might hear it someplace where you can't defend yourself. Example, I was at someone's home. And this person, he just liked keeping the Wahhabi channel on all the time in Farsi. They've got Wahhabi channels in Farsi now. And let me say this on the side too. Ayatollah Makarim, he says this, it's a good point. Even when we say Wahhabi, it's not that all Wahhabis, we're going to have issues with them. He says this. I'm just going to quote him. That's all I'm going to say. I'm just quoting him. He says the Takfiris of the Wahhabis or Salafis. As a matter of fact, let me tell you, I've seen some of these Salafis even that they question Muawiyah. Yeah? It's cool. It's interesting. Something to look into. He makes this point. But anyway, I don't want to generalize this. I just quoted what Ayatollah Uthman Makarim, one of our maraji' of today, he says. Anyway, there's a Wahhabi channel going on. All right. The guy, the host of the program, someone calls him, a Shia calls him, and he starts arguing. And then the host, he knows his stuff, kind of. You know, they memorize where the hadiths are in our books. And then he says, well, what do you say? They're talking about the marriage of Kulthum and the second Khalifa. He says, so what do you say about this? He says, oh, we don't believe in that. That never happened. He says, okay, then what do you say about this hadith? He opens up a hadith for him from one of our most major books that we'll talk about, Usul al-Kafi. He says, what do you say about this hadith? And the guy, the Shia, he's like, oh, I didn't know that. Oh my God, wait, what? How come? And he starts stuttering. How come our ulama haven't told us about this? Maybe it was a setup, all of it. I don't know. But the guy is shocked and he's scared. And you can tell he's going to go and start calling people after he hangs up the phone and asking about this. So the reason why we're covering it is so that you don't get stuck in like that when you call a TV channel and you want to argue with people. All right. So that's the question. Right here, someone might say, there's no necessitation, there's no link between me giving my daughter's hand and not having issues with others. I've heard some sheikhs say this on our side, but personally, my very humble and valueless opinion is this won't cut it. You can't say that, I'm sorry. There's no link between these two. And then they'll give you examples. Even those examples, it's a different thing. It has nothing to do with this. Brothers and sisters, if there was major issue between the fourth Khalifa and the second Khalifa, Imam Ali and the second Khalifa, he's not going to give his daughter's hand in marriage. You can't say, oh, this doesn't mean that. Sorry, this does mean that to an extent. So that's not going to cut it. Let's move on to other things that have been said and see how good those are. Now there's two parts to this. Then we're going to talk about whether this marriage happened at all or not. And then we're going to move on that even if it did happen, what happened. Okay? Now some, like Shaykh al-Mufid, some in the contemporary world, like Ayatollah al-Uzma, Shahabuddin al-Mar'ashi al-Najafi, rahmatullah alayh, which I wish I had time to talk about his story, and how much trouble he went through to buy manuscripts of our books, to keep them and preserve them. And when you go to his library in Qom, and you see those manuscripts, some of them he's written on the side, I bought this book for this much, and to get that money, I had to fast for 20 days for somebody, so that for someone's deceased, so that I get the money, so I buy the book. Yes, these are manuscripts. Anyway, if I'm not careful, I'll just wander off, and we'll run out of time. All right. They say no, this marriage is not something that happened between the Kulthum of Fatima al-Zahra and Ali ibn Abi Talib, and the second Khalifa. It's not. And then they bring their reason. Why isn't it? They say because, now here I want you to pay attention and come with me. They say because there was no daughter by the name of Kulthum. That's what they say. I'm just saying what they say. Okay then, we hear about Kulthum a lot. Who is she then? They say wherever Kulthum is mentioned, who the person who is meant by that is Zainab al-Kubra. And then they'll bring proof for it. For example, they say in Sham, someone stood up and spoke against Yazid by the name of Kulthum. While everyone knows that the Kulthum of Fatima al-Zahra and them, even if she was alive, she had died before that. She wasn't alive. And we have cases upon cases where an Kulthum is speaking, but it's Zainab al-Kubra. Everyone knows in history that this is where Lady Zainab spoke. And it hasn't proven, they'll tell you, that there was an, if Kulthum is mentioned, that was another name for her, Lady Zainab. Okay, I don't want to speak more about this, I might get in trouble. Let's move on. That's one thing they say. Others will tell you she did exist, but there is no solid proof that the marriage took place. Okay. Others will say she did exist, but there is proof that it didn't happen. We have proof that it did not happen. For example, they will tell you, and Kulthum did get married to the second Khalifa. Alright, so this is answer number one. For all the things that I said so far weren't that important, weren't that good. From here on, let's start counting. Number one, they will tell you that, for example, An-Nawawi, the great commentator of Sahih al-Bukhari, I think, One of the two Sahihain. And let me tell you this, brothers and sisters, the commentaries on these books are very valuable. Lots of the things that you want to find are in the commentaries. Like, for example, Fath al-Bari of Sahih al-Bukhari, for example. And other ones. Some of the interesting things that you need, you find there. One of them is Nawawi. He's one of the greats. He has a commentary. What does he say? He says this. He says, when Abu Bakr was dying, he told his daughter, Aisha, take care of your two brothers and your two sisters after me. Surprised, Aisha said, I know my two brothers, but all I have is one sister. Who's the other sister you're talking about? Who do you mean by the second sister? Abu Bakr said, I believe the child my wife Habiba bint Kharija is carrying is a girl. On his deathbed, he's saying this apparently. And Nawawi goes on to say that it did eventually turn out to be a girl, and they name her Kulthum. Umar ibn al-Khattab married this girl. So there was an Kulthum, but not the daughter of them, or we don't care if they had a daughter or not. And Nawawi is telling us that this daughter, there's a daughter of Abu Bakr by the name of Kulthum. She's the one that Umar ibn al-Khattab married. That's one point. Now, interestingly here, no one tells Abu Bakr, you're on your deathbed, إِنَّ الرَّجُلْ لَيَهْجُرْ. No one says this to him, that he's predicting that he's going to have a daughter. Anyway, that's one thing they say. Another thing, the main thing is yet to come, brothers and sisters. I'm just warming us up. Najmuddin al-Tabasi, he says that Ayatollah Mar'ashi al-Najafi said that Asma' bint Umays had several children from Abu Bakr. Who is Asma'? Whose mother is Asma? She was the wife of course, Abu Bakr. Who did she have from Abu Bakr? Muhammad, rahmatullah alayh. Yes, the son of Abu Bakr, Muhammad bin Abi Bakr, one of the greatest and most loyal companions of Ali ibn Abi Talib, that Ali ibn Abi Talib raised in his home, because he married Asma bint Umays after Abu Bakr was, after he died. Okay. So he says, Asma bint Umays had several children from Abu Bakr. One of them was Kulthum. After Abu Bakr's death, Imam Ali married Asma, and her daughter Kulthum also came to the home of Ali, and she became his Rabiba. Yes? If a guy marries a sister that has a daughter, when he marries that sister, and the marriage is consummated, that lady's daughter from another person becomes mahram to him and like his daughter. Okay? So Kulthum is his Rabiba, this whole scenario that I just said. Imam Ali would call Muhammad bin Abi Bakr, and Kulthum, he would call them Ibni wa Ibnati. You get where the mix-up comes? Some might say the daughter of Ali was married to the second Khalifa. Maybe it was this. Maybe it's enough for us. And Umar had married this daughter. The fact that there were two Kulthums has caused many to mix things up and think Imam Ali's daughter has married the second Khalifa, while this is not the case. Okay, here, this very, very humble and nothing servant is going to say something, which is me. I want to give a little opinion here. That this is good, fine, but if Imam Ali is so close to this Kulthum that is not his biological daughter, if he's so close that he's calling her his ibnati, his bint, still, if there were dark ties between these two individuals, the second Khalifa and Imam Ali, then Imam Ali is not going to give her hand in marriage to him. Who says that just because biological daughter, giving her hand means there's good relationship? But here, because it's not his biological daughter, then no, it's okay. It doesn't mean anything bad. No, same thing. Same thing holds. If he really cares, then he shouldn't. So this does not seem like it would be an answer that would be very convincing. If we can have another salawat and have the brothers move forward, inshallah. Recite salawat. If you can get that for me. Okay. Let's move on. Those are some of the reasons why some will tell you that it didn't happen, because they didn't even, the person that got married to him is not even the daughter of Fatimah al-Zahra and Ali ibn Abi Talib. Okay. There's other reasons why people will deny this incident. For example, Al-Mufid alayhi rahmah, which by the way, Shaykh Al-Mufid, lots of what we have in the Shia school, in our theology, in our ideology, in our beliefs, and especially regarding history, we owe to him. Very close to the time of the Ghaybat al-Sughra he is. Not very close, but close. He's from 1,000 years ago. 900 years ago maybe. Yes. About 900 to 1,000 years ago he is. Some of these individuals, they were the link between us and the Imams. Just 2 or 3 maybe, 4 or 5 sometimes. These individuals who saved the heritage. For example, the Imam says, if it wasn't for Zurara, then the heritage would have been lost. How cool is that? What an honor it is to be the link between the Imams and all the future generations to come. Because this person recorded some of the things that the Imam said. Inshallah, some people are recording what I'm saying right now and writing it down. Okay. So Shaykh Al-Mufid, and I'm just kidding, you know. Shaykh Al-Mufid, he says there are too many discrepancies in the story of the marriage that render this story something that didn't happen. For example, and there was like 7 or 8, I just have 4 here. Number one, some say Imam Ali himself did the marriage, while others say that Abbas, the uncle of the Prophet, did the marriage contract. Some say Imam Ali allowed the marriage only after he was threatened, while others say he did it voluntarily. Some say Umar had a child from her by the name of Zayd. Some say Umar died before he even consummated the marriage because she was a little girl. And so on and so forth. It keeps going and going and going. Even in our hadiths, kind of, you might find some discrepancies. So, too many, so it must have not happened, Shaykh Al-Mufid might say. Right. But our question is this. And remember how I said we're going to use their ways when it comes to us answering some of the things they say, they tell us, our Sunni brothers. Is that, show me in Bukhari and Muslim that this marriage happened. Show me. If someone else will turn back to me and say, show me that Ghadir happened in Muslim and Bukhari, although it's in all the other books, then you show me here. Although it's in other books, but show me in Bukhari and Muslim that it happened. All they will show you is one thing. And I'll read it to you. The only thing you find is this. Umar ibn al-Khattab was distributing some clothing. This is in Bukhari. Distributing some clothing among some of the women of Medina. One of these pieces of clothing was left. They told him to give it to the daughter of the Prophet that was with him. Allati indak. She's with you. The one that's with you. That's all that you find. And by this, the hadith says, the historical account, and by this they meant Kulthum bint Ali, the daughter of Ali. So first of all, this is their own ijtihad. They're telling us. It's not that the account is saying this. It's saying they meant this person. 1. 2. What's she doing? She's with him. What does that mean? Although, we have to be fair. If there's a girl that's living with the second Khalifa, there must be a marriage. But still, the question is that, is this all you have? And you're making a big deal because the big deal is made out of this story. That's all we have in these 2 books. Some of our ulama, they will tell you that no. Haven't you fixed Fatimiyya enough already for yourself? Fatimiyya, if you have taken care of it for yourself already, and you're sure it happened, then this Fatimiyya should be a reason that such a marriage didn't happen. Shall I repeat? If you're 100% sure that Fatimiyya took place, and those things that were not supposed to happen after the Prophet did happen, this should be a very big sign that there was no marriage, no such marriage. Not vice versa. Such marriage that we can't even find good accounts of in the Sahihain is a sign that something of such greatness didn't happen. Now, let's move on though. Let's move on to those who say, no, it did happen. Who says that? From the Shia school. Oh yeah, it's probably some loser who doesn't know what he's talking about. No. You want big names. I was surprised actually I saw this. Sayyid Ali al-Milani. Sayyid Ali al-Husayn al-Milani, a person who spent all of his life in Shia Sunni issues, and his books are very famous. And man, do they hate him because of what he's done. And he's the one that's known, he doesn't compromise. He's not compromised at all. He says everything. Alright, but here, he talks about such a marriage. You're like, wow! And other names, I don't want to mention names, because then people will say, oh, you know, they'll start talking and stuff. Before I talk about why they say this though, and it did happen, and what their answer is to this whole debate that we're having right now, a question that will come up is, why would the second Khalifa, who is about 55, 56, 57, something in that neighborhood, why would he want to get married to a 7-year-old? That's the main question. Now, the Sunni school has an answer, the Shia school has an answer. I will just present what they say, that's all. And judgment is left to whoever wants to judge. The Sunni school will tell you that the second Khalifa had major ties with the Prophet. His daughter was the wife of the Prophet. Yes? He was... and other ties that he had. But there was one tie that he wanted to make sure he has, and that is to be the son-in-law of the Prophet too. And that's why he has been narrated to say that, I heard the Prophet say that on the day of judgment all ties will cease to exist. All ties will be valueless. I'll have no value, will do no good except the ties that you have with me, the Prophet has said. I have many ties with the Prophet. This one also I want to have. That's why I want to get married to one of the descendants of the daughter of the Prophet, so that I am his son-in-law. Okay, so that sounds like a very blessed, you know, a reason for such a thing. Okay. The Shia school, of course, will say different. Will say something different here. And will say that, say two things. Number one, the second Khalifa knows the verses of the Quran that inna akramakum indallahi atqakum, that the only thing that takes you up is not ties. It's not about your race or your tribe or who you have ties with. It is whoever has most obedience of Allah. That's one. Number two, they will tell you that no, there were some things that he wanted to cover up. This is our opinion. That when you are the family of the Prophet, then you're not seen as an outsider who might have gone against the Prophet's family. Some of the things that you might have done, that for example, the first Khalifa, when he's passing away, in their books, of course, they say he says, I regret three things. One of them being, I shouldn't have broken the sanctity and opened the doors to the house of Fatima al-Zahra. That's all the report says, of course. So it's things like this that you can cover up with a marriage like this. Or else, why would a 55-year-old want to get married to a seven-year-old? Having said that, let's move on to why these ulama, which might be a majority, I have not counted, say that such a marriage, yeah, it did happen. Now, I am just telling you what they say. This is none of my opinion here. As I said, I'm not qualified to even research in this. I'm scared to do research in these things. It's hard. This history is not something that you just, you know, talk about. You have to look at all the clues, and that takes a lot of time. Anyway, but I'm just going to relate to you what they say. They will tell you that this shouldn't be something that you're afraid of. As a matter of fact, the opposite. This is something that we're happy that happened. Oh my God, what do you mean? It shows the degree of the madlumiyya of our first imam. How is that? Why is that? Let's just go to some hadith from Usul al-Kafi. Now usually I won't talk about chain of narrators because this isn't the Hawza. But let me just read this chain of narrators to you. The first, there's a chapter in Usul al-Kafi. A chapter, FYI. That says the marriage of Kulthum with the second Khalifa. Yeah? We don't want to get caught off guard sometime. They tell us, you yourselves believe in this. And you're like, oh my God, what do I say? There's a lot to say. The first hadith goes like this. Ali ibn Ibrahim... which many of the hadith of Usul al-Kafi come from this individual. He's in the chain. Who does he narrate from? Usually from his father, An Abi. Number two. These are both fiqh. These are both super reliable. An Ibn Abi Umair, which is also super, super reliable, very reliable, gold. An Hisham bin Salim, gold. And from Hamad, An Zurara, gold. We got gold pouring from the sky tonight. Fi Tazweej Kulthum, An Abi Abdullah al-Sadiq alayhi salam, that he said, Fi Tazweej Kulthum. So the chain of narrators is a chain of golden narrators, all of them. And that's why he brings it in as the first hadith in this chapter. Usually, Shaykh al-Kulaini rahmatullah alayhi, the more reliable hadith he brings in the beginning of the chapter. Okay, what does the hadith say? It's like five words. And I'm not going to translate it word for word, but I'll explain it. Regarding the marriage of Kulthum, he said, فَقَالْ إِنَّ ذَلِكَ فَرْجٌ غُصِبْنَا. That was one of our nawamis, one of our namuses, one of the daughters of the Prophet that was, according to this hadith, stolen from us, usurped from us. When you steal something, do you get permission or do you take it by force? Al-Kafi. This one hadith. So the story goes like this, brothers and sisters. And we have accounts for this. That he came, the second Khalifa, and he ordered that this happen. He ordered that her hand be given to him and threatened, according to our sources. Now someone might say, of the other schools, they'll tell you, I don't believe in your books. We say, it doesn't matter. You were using this to try to get me to doubt about Fatimiyya. My hadiths are telling me what this real story was behind this. Here, I don't have to use your sources for you. Here, because you're trying to convince me, you have to bring something from my sources. And even if you happen to bring something from my sources, they will never be able to stand up to the strength of these three hadiths that I'm going to read. I read the first one. Golden chains. Golden chain of narrators. And the content is very clear. Ghusibna. The wording, straightforward. Lamma khataba ilayh, qala lahu. This is the second hadith. When the second Khalifa came and asked for her hand from Amir al-Mu'mineen, قَالَ لَهُ أَمِيرُ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ إِنَّهَا صَبِيَّةٌ. She's a young child. Now Ali is trying to find an excuse to say no. قَالَ فَلَقِيَ الْعَبَّاسِ. Imam Ali says no. The second Khalifa goes to the uncle of Ali ibn Abi Talib and the uncle of the Prophet, Abbas bin Abdul Muttalib. And he tells him, what's up? What's going on? Like, what's wrong with me? Why is he telling me no? I'm going to read the Arabic and I'm not going to translate this part. There's a reason why I don't want to translate it. قال وما ذلك. What's wrong? He says, I asked for her hand. خطبت إلى ابن أخيك. I asked your nephew for her hand. فردني. He rejected me. أما والله لأعورن زمزم ولا أدع لكم مكرمة. You Bani Hashim. إلا هدمتها ولا أقيمن عليه شاهدين على أمير المؤمنين بأنه سرق ولا أقطعن يمينه فأتاه العباس. So there's threats taking place here. So Abbas comes to Amir al-Mu'minin Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. He says, listen, this is what's going on. You have to do this. So what does Ali say alayhi salam? He says, go ahead, do it. No, he says, وَسَأَلَهُ أَنْ يَجْعَلَ الْأَمْرِ إِلَيْهِ فَجَعَلَهُ إِلَيْهِ. Abbas tells him, at least let me do what I think should be done. Imam Ali says, okay, I'll leave it in your hands. Whatever you decide, O uncle Abbas. Regarding Kulthum, I'll leave it in your hands. And yes, the marriage took place, according to this. Hadith number 3. سألت أبا عبد الله الصادق, of course, again, عليه السلام, they asked Imam al-Sadiq, so there was threats, there was force. Now there's a question that will come up after this that I'll address. If he was forced, there's problems. سألت, they asked the Imam of a woman whose husband dies, where does she have that waiting period? Is it in her own husband's home who has passed away? Does she have to go with that? Does she have to hold the waiting period in her husband's house before she can get married again to someone else? Or can she go anywhere she wants? In other words, does she have to stay home or can she go out? قال بلا حيث شاءت. She can go wherever she wants after the husband dies. I don't want to give bad ideas to the sisters now. After the husband dies, she's free to go wherever she wants. She doesn't have to stay in the home anymore for the waiting period. Okay. ثم قال. This is the part we need. إن عليا لما مات عمر. When Umar died, what did Imam Ali do? أتى أم كلثوم. He came to Umm Kulthum, who was in his house. Brothers and sisters, this is Al-Kafi. Some people will get upset. How dare you say this happened? I'm just relating to what ulama are saying and what the books are saying. But there's a way out of this. There's a way to fix this. And the hadiths are telling us what's happening. It's by force. It adds to the madlumiyya. It adds to us our understanding of how those times were, that you can marry someone by force. You can marry someone by force. And not anyone, Ali ibn Abi Talib's daughter, you can marry by force. So later on, so people won't come and say, how could Ali just stand there and watch when Fatima al-Zahra, things happened. This is how it is back then. فَأَخَذَ أَتَى أُمْ كُلْثُومِ. He came to Umm Kulthum. Ali ibn Abi Talib comes to Umm Kulthum. أَخَذَ بِيَدِهَا فَانْطَلَقَ بِهَا إِلَى بَيْتِهِ. He came, took her hand and took her back home. This itself shows that there's a sign of, you know, discontent. So if it's something by force, is that going to cut it? No, it's not going to cut it. Just a shadow of doubt will stop, let alone when our hadiths are telling us what happened. So a question here is, so you're saying he allowed, na'udhu billah, I'm sorry I say this, but he allowed his daughter to commit, na'udhu billah, adultery, because he was forced to? No, that's not what it means. Sometimes you don't want to get married to someone. You don't like that person. Doesn't mean the marriage contract is necessarily void. Doesn't mean that. If you go in Islamic law, you'll see. If a marriage is forced, there's two types. Sometimes it's forced, meaning that person doesn't even want to say the contract. Sometimes they say the contract, but they don't like this person. They'll allow the marriage to happen at the end of the day, because if they don't and they're forced to get married, then it's all problematic. This means nothing like this. So this shouldn't be a challenge to that either. Anyway, brothers and sisters, I'm not going to go on with this one. It ends here. Even if it's proven that such a thing did take place, not only does it not prove the point of Fatimiyya not happening, rather it shows that, oh my God, it must have happened then. Ghusibna. Brothers and sisters, remember this one word, ghusibna. She was stolen from us. Imam Sadiq is saying, alayhi salam. Let's move on to the last question. And I might go a little bit over my time, inshallah, bear with me. The third question, which is, I think, the most important question, is that, how can Imam Ali, the famous question of how can Imam Ali, Fatih al-Khaybar, the one who tore the door of Khaybar, the one who killed Abdul Rahman bin Abdul Wud, the one who killed all those the major warriors of the Jewish castles and fortresses of Khaybar and all of that, all of a sudden just stand there and watch as they attack Fatimah al-Zahra. So there must have not been anything happening. You just think that it happened. Here, we're going to have to understand again. I'm going to say these. I want you guys to go, inshallah, you go back home, the brothers and sisters, for... You have to let this sink in, absorb it. Yes, think about it a little bit. The different things that are going to be said. Number one, they asked Fatima al-Zahra, why would she go to the door to open the door? How can a man's ghayra allow this woman to go and open the door? Now from here on, as a matter of fact, I'm going to tell you this. Credit has to go where it's due. This is Ayatollah Najmuddin al-Tabasi speaking, who has also done a lot of work in these issues. In these issues and these shubuhat and challenges that are put forth. And I really liked it, the way he had approached it. I hadn't heard this approach before. I liked it. Anyway, some of it you might have heard before. Some of it, although, is a little bit newer. He says this, first of all, in the Arab culture back then, if a woman would come to the door, they would back off. They would back off. He says this itself was an attempt. When a woman comes to the door, those who are, you know, threatening, and they say, even if Fatima is in there, all that, if this is the culture of back then for sure what's going to happen is that they're going to back off from the door and entering the home. And not only any woman, خَيْرُ نِسَاء وَسَيِّدَةُ نِسَاءِ الْعَالَمِينَ, or at least according to them, سَيِّدَةُ نِسَاءِ أَهْلِ الْجَنَّةِ, at least, has come to the door. We must bow down. They didn't move back though. So one person said, how come they sent her forward? First of all, this is her house. How many times have you heard Bayt Ali? How many times have you heard Bayt Fatima? They went to Bayt of who? Bayt Fatima or Bayt Ali? Bayt Fatima. Fatima is not a normal woman. It's as if the Prophet is standing there. End of story. If the Prophet comes to the door, he says, don't open the door. If Ali comes to the door, they will come in. Fatima has to go to the door. She has to go to the door. A woman and not any woman. An Arab of that time even will know that he has to back off. Number one. Number two. Ayatollah Najmuddin al-Tabasi, he said this. Now the book hasn't come out yet. I haven't seen the book yet. He says, I have done 2 to 3 years of research. He has put 2 to 3 years of his life into what? He says, I have been going into the background of some of those who were there. Now, when he says this, it's not necessarily, for example, the major figures that were present around the house then. He's saying there's about, I think, if I'm not mistaken, he said 23. I don't think I took this down in my notes, but 23, I think he said, of those individuals who were there then, because I've gone and looked in their background. He says, these people before becoming Muslims, some of them were thugs, proper thugs. Some of them might not have even seen Rasulullah. Some of them might have never met Rasulullah even. Let me open a parenthesis here real quick. That the bay'ah that they say that was unanimously taken from the people, everyone said, we want the first Khalifa to be Khalifa. There's a tribe by the name of Bani Aslam. That we have some reports that the second Khalifa says, the only time I knew that the Khilafah of the first Khalifa is cemented and is established is when Bani Aslam happened to be in Medina when we were taking bay'ah from people. Who are Bani Aslam? A tribe from outside. They're Bedouins, desert dwellers. They don't know what's going on. They probably haven't seen the Prophet. They happen to be in the city so they can get some of their goods and go back. They were somehow convinced that the Khilafah is in the first Khalifa's hands. Oh people, we need your help to get bay'ah from others. The reports say this. Now of course these are not in Bukhari and Muslim, but they are in the Sunni, like Tabari and these types of sources. It says that they were beating people up to get bay'ah. Let's go back to those who were around the house. He says, I've done background research on each of these. Some of them were thugs. Some of them were, they would play with knives as if in today's terminology. They would play with knives. That kind of stuff. Dangerous people. Probably became Muslim because they see everyone else is becoming Muslim. Who knows? He says, these were the ones around. What happens when such individuals come around such a home? This is, brothers and sisters, this is the key point that I'm going to make here. The key point that I want to make here. But before it, I have to explain something. The bigger picture is something that is used a lot. We use it a lot. He was looking at the bigger picture. He saw the bigger picture. I'll give you 2 examples and then I'll move back into what we were talking about. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala created the heavens and the earth and he put man in it so that man can reach what he's supposed to be reach. Okay. Then Allah sees all the suffering and all the evil happening in this world. Why doesn't he do anything about it? Now us as muwahideen, inshallah, as muslimin, we know he's there. So this isn't going to cause us to doubt whether there is a God or not. But there's a question like why? You know what? I wish he's powerful, he's strong. God is not emotional, brothers and sisters. God doesn't go by emotions. In other words, God sees the bigger picture. If he's going to intervene, there's no point in creating all of this. Either he's not going to intervene, or if he's going to intervene, he should just take us straight to heaven. Not even bring us, no taklif, nothing. He has to create man and he has to put taklif. And if there's going to be taklif, it has to be in a world that is material. Because in a world of material, there is clash. Wherever there is clash, there can be taklif. So he has to bring us here. Okay, in a world full of clash, there will be evil. There will be suffering. Someone will say, why doesn't he do anything about it? Why doesn't he do anything about it? He said, the bigger picture was what? Why did he even create it in the first place? So people can make it. At least those who choose to make it, they can make it. They're given this opportunity. The bigger picture, he doesn't get in the way. Why didn't the Prophet, this is also an honest question by some, why didn't the Prophet do anything about those companions that you say turned their backs on him when he passed away? Why didn't he do anything about them before he passed away? If it was us, we would take a gun and we're just like, shoot everybody. No, the Prophet didn't do it like that. They asked the Prophet, Prophet, you know that there's some of these companions, they have issues. The Prophet said, if I do anything, it'll hurt the bigger picture. 100 years later, they're bashing and attacking. And there's an onslaught on the personality of the Prophet after all these years. Although he was the Rasul al-Rahma. And he hardly even killed one person by his own hands in his life. In battles. They say some people have it difficult proving that he was able to even kill one person in the battles. He was doing this on purpose. Because these tribes are at war with each other. And then if he kills one of them in one of these battles, then they're going to be grudges forever. But Imam Ali has to do the dirty work, of course. And eventually those grudges came back. But the Prophet is a different story. So now someone will say, why doesn't the Prophet do anything about them? The bigger picture, my brothers and sisters. If he starts killing, he says, if I do something to my own companions, then what will the people say after that? That Muhammad kills his own companions. Yeah? The bigger picture. Let's move on now. A question that comes is, the Prophet told Imam Ali to be patient. What does that mean, be patient after me? How can you stand there and watch? Brothers and sisters, there's a bigger picture here. But I want to word it and explain it in a way that we might not have heard before. The thugs that are out around there, that if you mess with them, they might just spill some blood. What would have happened if an actual fight had broken out where swords were drawn? Who would be killed? Or who? Well, of course, half of them would have been killed, at least. Ali ibn Abi Talib, a young man in his 30s, whose reputation is known. He's known for, you know, his valor. Okay. So he kills half of them. What happens? Eventually, Imam Ali will be killed. Or he will be taken in and apprehended, and eventually qisas will take place, and he will be killed. And then in the future, what will they say? This is very important. They will say, Ali ibn Abi Talib attacked us and we had no choice. And we killed the only light of guidance that was left. This is very important. Think about it. Before we get emotional, think about it. How can he just stand there and watch? That is the greatest musibah. That's the problem. That he knows that he has to protect himself too. Of course. There are accounts that he didn't just stand there either. He attacked back. Broke some noses. Slammed some people down to the ground. In some reports he says, if I had enough people, I would have stood up. But I have to protect the only light of guidance. This light of guidance, although he was there, look at what happened. 3 civil wars in his khilafah and all the bloodshed till today. If he wasn't there, Tawheed was gone. They're looking for an excuse to kill him. Think about it, brothers and sisters. Whenever I reach this part of history, it hurts me. And then it hurts me more when I see that our dearest Shia brothers and sisters are shaken by such questions and challenges. This is the bigger picture. And then the word bigger picture is just used. They throw it around as if it holds no value, you know. Yeah, we've heard the bigger picture. Or we've heard that, you know, he was told by the Prophet to be patient. But you know, this Ali, how can he watch? That's the whole musibah. When you're crying for Imam Hussein, when you're crying for Imam Ali, remember Fatimiyya. That's why they say, Awwal Madhloom is Ali. Yeah. They would have said Ali died. The same way they said Fatimiyya never happened. They would have covered it up easily. And where would me and you be right now? Let's go on. That's the main argument. And I think that finishes the job. But there's other things. If that shows that he doesn't have ghira, then the Prophet also doesn't have ghira. Why? Because he left his daughters behind and he migrated to Medina. When the Prophet migrated, he left Fatima al-Zahra behind. He left Zainab behind. And as a matter of fact, Zainab, she was married to a mushrik. They caused her to miscarry her child too. They scared her, she fell off the camel. The Prophet leaves all of them behind. He doesn't have ghira. The bigger picture, Tawheed has to be preserved. Yes, for Tawheed, blood has to be spilled. And Ashura takes place. Other things take place for Tawheed. That's why Imam Ali says, then I began to think in Nahj al-Balagha, khutbah shikshikiyah. Although there's a discussion about this being a khutbah or not, but he has said this to Ibn Abbas. He says, then I began to think whether I should assault, should I attack? Or endure calmly the blinding darkness of tribulations wherein the grown-ups are made old and feeble. A grown-up becomes old because of the hardship that Ali is going through. What hardship? Things that I just talked about and more. And the young grow old and... And the true believer acts under strain till he meets Allah on his death. I found, and this is the famous line, that endurance thereon was wiser. Wiser. Ya Ali, why don't some of our Shia brothers, who usually have sincere intentions, why don't they use wisdom a little bit more? Imam Ali says, I looked and I noticed this is the wiser way. I am going to defend Fatima al-Zahra no matter what, no matter how much problems that's going to cause. We have to say the truth. Wiser, wisdom. Ud'u ila sabili rabbik bil hikmah wal maw'idh al hasana. Wal maw'idh al hasana. Wisdom, we don't find it that much these days. May Allah have mercy on the Shia. I saw that it's wiser, so I adopted patience instead of assault. Although there was pricking in the eye, a thorn in my eye as if, and suffocation in the throat. This is not metaphorical. That's one of the points. As I said, he's not going to kill anyone, but he is going to stand up. And that's why we have reports where he stood up and he did fight back. But he's very careful. That blood is not spilled. How can he just stand there and watch? This is supposed to happen, brothers and sisters. The same way Allah will stand there and watch Imam Hussein be slaughtered in the worst fashion, Imam Ali will stand there and watch according to what they say. This is not a strong reason. And then you find some Shia actually using this as an excuse, as an argument. I don't see it. I see this as a very simple approach. I don't see this as a reason for Fatimiyah not taking place. It's hard. We are a result, brothers and sisters. We are a result of the patience of Ali. We are the result of the patience of Fatima al-Zahra. We're not the result of the sword of Ali ibn Abi Talib necessarily. Even if we are the result of both at least. Patience when it's supposed to happen. Or else if he was going to do things the way we think they should have happened, there would be no tawheed, there would be no wilaya, and there would be no love. What do I mean by love? I mean Ashura and Fatimiyah and the Ahlul Bayt. We've never experienced any of these. May Allah give us the tawfiq to hear these things more and more, open our eyes a little bit, think a little bit more. And Allah gives us the power to be able to defend ourselves a little bit more when it comes to these arguments, inshaAllah. I thank Allah for this opportunity, for these nights. I thank the brothers and sisters involved in organizing it. It is not easy, I know. I see what goes on in the back, behind the scenes, and that's just a little bit of it. It's not easy. May Allah bless them. May Allah bless their deceased ones. I thank all of you for coming these nights and being very tolerant of some of the topics that were discussed that some of you might have heard, although I tried to go at them from a different angle, inshallah. And I ask you also to keep me in your du'as. Alhamdulillah. Recite 3 salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.